In the last episode, we considered the initiation of the college process in early high school age students. We now turn our attention to the end of the educational process, transitioning to the professional world, often through internships. I'll be joined by Robert J. Curie, co-author of How to Intern Successfully. Rob is co-founder and CEO of Agile Rainmakers, a high-impact business development consulting and advisory firm based in Chicago's Gold Coast. His 20-plus year career in the financial industry has seen him in many roles: an equity derivatives trader, portfolio manager, corporate strategist, chief operating officer, recruiter, hedge fund executive, and private equity investor. Rob takes great pleasure in supporting college students and recent graduates in making career and life choices that support the fulfillment of their life's goals. He has hired and mentored many interns over the years and has a passion for ensuring their success. For years, he previously led personal and professional development seminars for Landmark Worldwide. Rob earned a BSc in electrical engineering at Princeton University and his MBA in finance and international business from Duke University's Fuqua School of Business. Rob, welcome to the show. It's a pleasure to have you here today.
Thanks so much. Appreciate it.
So it looks like you previously had a pretty prolific career in finance. So I'm curious what led you to go to consulting from there and about your experience with college counseling.
Well, after spending 21 years in the financial industry, I wanted to do something a little different 5 years ago, and I started a advisory and consulting firm for high growth companies. And along the way, I started hiring interns, and they really blew me away, and I decided to make it a internship program. And so I've been doing that now for many years, and I've decided to write books about it. And that's why I leverage, you know, the practical hands-on experience working with youth of today, getting some great work done for clients and writing about it. That's been my approach.
Cool. So the internship program, is that something you do on the side or is that kind of at the center of your business?
It's something I do mainly during the summers. So I have a whole process where I will find interns in the fall, winter, and then bring them on board in June and July to do client project work. And all the while in between, I'm building a relationship with them and curating the projects so that they are just at the right level for them to learn a lot and contribute a lot.
How old are these kids that you're talking about working with? Are these college students, high school? What's the range?
Typically college students, yes. So anywhere from 18 to 22.
Now, what drew your interest to these internships for young professionals? Is that something you'd kind of been dabbling in for a while, or what made you go in that direction?
Well, I've hired interns in the past and found them to be very intelligent, very motivated, and productive. And when I started Agile Rainmakers, I thought it would be helpful to bring on interns to do some of the work that needs to happen early on in a company's development. And I've consistently been absolutely impressed by the level of maturity, the ability to be coachable, and just the desire and interest to roll up their sleeves and get some great work done, whether it's a data analysis project, a research project, whether it's something creative or a survey, you name it. Just the hunger and the drive to do something productive very early in their careers is something that's invigorating and it's exciting, and it's something that fuels the organization when they show up.
You mentioned data analysis, and I forget the other thing, but I'm curious what type of work exactly they do for you in the internship program.
We had a client that was a sync company, and they were getting a lot of returns, and they wanted to figure out why certain syncs were coming back. And so the students, you know, researched all the data, figured out which syncs were coming back as a proportion of how many are sold and why. And then they started digging in to find out what it was that was off. So that was one kind of project. Another was, you know, just researching research centers around the world for a fastener company. You know, who are the global research centers that may be interested in an innovative fastener that could take production to another level? So they could research that way. They've also done a client survey. Believe it or not, some companies haven't done a survey of their customers in 10, 15 years. So they've actually done that and not only done the survey, but they'll do the A/B testing to make sure the survey gets as many responses as possible and then compile the information into a beautiful PowerPoint presentation with a, you know, certain summary or conclusion based on the survey results. So these are some of the projects that they've done.
Interesting. Yeah, CRM is probably an underappreciated facet of business, I'd say, pleasing your kind of current clientele. So what would you say is the best part about working with these young interns, and what would you say is the most challenging?
So the most rewarding is seeing the newness and the discovery of it all. Now, these interns, they bring a fresh set of eyes. And they see your firm and they see your clients, your business through beginner eyes. And that's totally invigorating. It has you see it a whole new way because it kind of gets to be a little humdrum, perhaps, when you see the same thing over and over. But now someone has fresh eyes on it and may get excited about something that you've been taking for granted. So I find that extremely gratifying to watch that happen. What also is interesting to me is getting to learn things about the company again that I've stopped thinking about, you know, and looking at perhaps maybe there's a better way to do something, or what's my rationale for a certain process that I follow, and perhaps now's the time to upgrade it. So those are very interesting things that come around. I think another piece is explaining the basics of the methodology or the basics of the approach reinforces it for myself and what we're trying to do. So I find those very interesting and wouldn't happen unless there was an intern there to explain it to. The other aspect, though, is what's challenging. And I think for me, the most challenging aspect is perhaps before they even start, it's curating the project so that they're not so hard that they're frustrated and upset, and they're not so easy that they're bored and they think the industry isn't of high caliber. So curating it, that's a challenge to find the right level for a project for a college to work on that adds value and they learn a lot. The next thing I would say that's challenging is the first couple of weeks. First couple of weeks of training them and having them work through their nervousness as they get into a routine. Students aren't used to an 8-hour day, and you really have to work them up into that. It's not natural. What's natural for them, you know, is a school day. It's a class, another class, a break, you know, et cetera. Like lots of breaks throughout the day. The work environment's very different. You and I might work 3-4 hours straight. They're not used to that. So the first few weeks, I think, are the adjustment period is pretty challenging as they, you know, they get trained and they work through whatever nervousness or other emotions they have, and they get used to not being tired and being productive, regardless of whether they've had a break in the last hour or not.
Here are some things that stick out to me after our first segment in talking with Rob. The concept of the internship program has always been interesting to me. I think to some degree, many businesses view it as a form of cheap labor. So I think it's important as you're looking for a position like this to find a company that's actually going to teach you something, that you're going to get a fulfilling experience. I don't think that happens with all internships. And I think one way to do that is to look for companies that are interested in your education rather than using you for busy work, which is easier said than done. You know, it's difficult to tell a company's motivations from the outset, but I think that's something that's important to consider when you're shopping around. Another thing that stuck out to me was Rob's description of what draws him to that young age group, which he described as having hunger and drive. At one point, he described them as having beginner eyes, which I think is a phrase that's common in other contexts. I think that's absolutely right. I mean, that's what drew me to high school teaching to begin. I think it's very easy to get sort of jaded working in a business environment like that, and perhaps in a more concrete realm. Getting that fresh perspective, I think, is certainly something that companies get out of having that internship program. So that's one of the benefits. I would say, I'm not sure he said this, but learning to show up on time and to be consistent and be reliable and communicate professionally, those are things that they haven't learned at that age. So I feel like it's a bit of a risk from a company's perspective in bringing people on in that way in terms of maturity. So it's important to present that maturity when you're applying for the internships. Another subject that came up was the concept that students really aren't used to working an 8-hour day, which is very true. When you're in college, really, it's not at all an 8-hour day. You're kind of going the opposite direction from high school. High school is very much a 9-to-5 type of profession where you're showing up early, you're staying all day, and you're leaving college. You're going to some classes sometimes. You can arrange your schedule strategically so that it's a bit more boom and bust in terms of your workload. I think it is abrupt shifting from that type of schedule to what you'd be expected to do in an internship, which is more along the lines of a 9-to-5. So it's important to prepare young students, I would say, for that type of shift as they go into a summer internship. How would you define that concept of internship, and why do they exist? Just kind of stepping back and looking at the trend.
I define it as any period of time during which a beginner acquires experience in an occupation, a profession, or a pursuit. So an internship is, you know, there's a set period of time and they're gaining experience, learning and growing, contributing to a certain profession. So that's how I would define an internship. And it could be 2 weeks, it could be 2 months, it could be 6 months, you know, whatever that duration is, but it's set. So you know there's a start date, you know there's an end date. And why do they exist? Well, the possibilities are vast. They could exist for recruiting purposes, you know, and that's one that I think most companies have them for. Another is to get a sense of the, you know, talent out there, whether or not they're hiring or not, but just to be informed of what's out there and to get some great work done and build relationships within the community. It's also just a great opportunity to contribute to the community, to society, to showcase what the profession is. Lots of reasons to have an internship. Mainly, though, I would say it's fostering a pipeline of future industry leaders is how I would best describe the reason for an internship.
That is interesting. It's kind of like the modern day guild. But what is the process of hiring those interns? Maybe you could take us into the inside view of that. You know, what kind of process do you go through? Specifically, I'm thinking about interviewing as well, to give us an inside look there.
It's a great question because I think it's incredibly important how you do this, because everything's a communication to a student, because it's all a first impression for them. And as Alex, you and I both know, first impressions really mean a lot and they last a long, long time. So how you interview and how you prepare is vital for the kind of impression you're going to make, not only on the student you end up hiring, but on the ones you don't hire, who will remember you and your organization practically forever. So first thing is you want to have a plan of how you're going to approach the interning. My plan is I start interviewing in December and January. I post a job description, job posting. I make sure there's lots of superlatives in it. You know, I want outstanding attention to detail. I want someone who's on time, you know, has a keen eye on performance, these sorts of things. You want to use superlatives to emphasize excellence because you'll attract what you're looking for. Then once you get those resumes and you figure out what you're looking for, and by the way, you want to know what you're looking for before you are looking at resumes. So you want to have you and your team, you want to have a criteria of what you're looking for. Otherwise, it becomes a much longer and topsy-turvy kind of process. So be clear what you're looking for. Have a great job description. As the resumes come in, you know what you're looking for, and then you start interviewing.
How long would you say you spend on each resume when you're going through that initial sort of vetting process?
I started, built, and sold a recruiting company years ago. I've seen thousands of resumes. So for me, it's, you know, under a minute. I know for most people, it's going to take a good 5 minutes to really get into it.
Well, so I feel like one of the traps that college students fall into is really trying to iron out every single tiny detail about, you know, their experience on the basketball team or whatever it is, and kind of missing the big picture about what their resume looks like and what kind of experience they're broadcasting and personality. And just to keep in mind that it's, you know, yeah, 30 seconds to a minute, maybe, you know, that the employer's reviewing that.
True. And it's important that there aren't any mistakes. There aren't any punctuation mistakes, that there's a real attention to detail in that resume, that there's a flow, that if you have dates on it, they're chronological. There are basics to a resume. You don't want to omit things that, you know, would be of interest to a potential employer in that field. So there's things. But in terms of what a resume ought to look like, one page. And if you're going to have a second page, one of the things I recommend that can always be helpful is an addendum. And it's a list of books you've read about that industry. And these would be books that you've read independently of school. So two candidates that come to me interested in consulting, and they both have the same first page of the resume, but one of them has a second page that lists all these books about consulting they've read in their free time. They're going to get the nod. So there are some things that you can do, but typically you want to stick to a one-page resume. And if you must have some sort of addendum, make sure it's industry specific, that demonstrates genuine interest in what you're doing.
There's not a standard format for a resume, I would say. However, there are like non-standard things that are like red flags for me instantaneously, where I would kind of drop the resume right away. Writing all cap locks, for instance. If you have a picture of yourself on the front, I'm going to probably drop that pretty soon. You mentioned one page, if it's like three or four pages generally. I mean, they can be in CV style, you know, which is a bit different if you have publications or things like that. But if you do have those sort of very non-standard elements to your resume, that's an immediate X.
It depends, Alex. I mean, in your business, you know your business better than anyone. And so for you, a picture on there doesn't make sense. If you're international, if you go overseas and you're interviewing people, it's fairly standard in some countries to have a picture on the resume. So it depends. So you have to also filter cultural norms that the students may be coming from. Because if there are some in some Southeast Asian countries, you know, the picture's on the resume and the student, though they're from the Southeast Asia, they're studying at MIT and they're sending you the resume in New York or Chicago or wherever, they're going to do what they know.
You want to customize, I would say, customize your resume to who you're applying to. That's another kind of, I think, trap that students fall into, is that they'll put something together that's kind of boilerplate and send it far and wide to as many places as possible without actually researching, you know, who they're applying to, what they're looking for, you know, and just kind of, it's kind of this throwing spaghetti at the wall and seeing what sticks sort of approach. And I don't think it's very effective. I think it'd be a lot better if we picked a handful and really did some research on them.
Agreed. When you're interviewing, have a set group of questions that you ask everybody. Ask the same questions. And the reason for that is you get better at hearing the answers and you get better at the follow-ups. So one of my standard questions is, what are your top three strengths in three words? And for some, they know themselves really well and they come right out with three words that are right in tune with who they are. And for others, they haven't really thought much about themselves, their backgrounds, what they can do, takes them much longer. But the fact that you're asking the same questions over and over to different candidates helps you to understand where each is relative to the others. So that's one of the things you want to do, is make sure you have a standard set of questions that you ask. But another key thing is, when the interview is over, consider giving them feedback immediately on the interview they just had. A lot of folks don't do that. And I know there's potential, you know, repercussions for doing it, doing it badly. However, I would say that for a lot of these students, they are extremely grateful to get any kind of feedback about how they're performing, right? And again, these are first impressions in their career. They're going to remember that for a long time, and they're going to be grateful for it. And it'll separate who you are from the rest. whether they come and intern with you or not. So from there, as a company, you want to know that you're going to get back to them. You know, tell them by when. It's amazing. I was just at Princeton a couple weeks ago, and I asked a room full of interns, potential intern students, you know, have you guys had companies not get back to you? Everyone's hands go up. There's no dignity in that. So we got to make sure that we get back to these students so that they know yes or no, or what they will find out. And that would be very positively reflected upon your own organization. So you get back to them in that sense. But here's a key thing in the interviewing process, which is before the interview, it's a good idea in the scheduling of it to give them an assignment to do. And this will give you a good sense of how they're going to work with you. So I have a standard email. And I came up with this because years ago when I would interview, companies would say, I'd say, what should I do to prepare? They'd say, do your homework. And I would. I'd do my class homework. And I'd show up and they'd say, I'm not really prepared. And I thought, well, you said do your homework, but that's not what they meant. So I lay it out. To prepare for the interview, I highly suggest that you watch the first video on my webpage, that you read through my webpage, read through some of the blogs, go through my LinkedIn profile, and come prepared with questions to ask me.
From a hiring perspective, it separates those that are just kind of throwing their resume in there and don't really have much of a devoted interest to it, you know, who you would actually consider hiring, right? I mean, you don't want somebody who's not engaged with your business at all.
If they're not going to do the prep work for the interview, it doesn't get better.
Right, exactly, yeah.
Right, it just doesn't. It's not going to get better because you're now paying them, you know, every 2 weeks during the summer. So that is a crucial piece of the interview process. Give them an assignment. I don't care what it is, just something. You know, in my case, I ask in the interview, how did you prepare for this interview? And the great candidates, they say, well, I went through your instructions word for word and I did everything that you asked. I'm like, great. All right. This could be a great intern. If someone that says, well, I didn't have time. Well, it's maybe just not important to you. Now, the next thing I'll say, though, in part of the quote interviewing process, the interview, they accept an offer. This is a vital thing. Schedule conversation with the student every 6 to 8 weeks leading up to the internship. So let's say they got an offer in January. You say, great, thanks for accepting it. We'll have a conversation every 6 to 8 weeks. Why don't we talk at the end of February, beginning of March? We talk again mid-April or so, and then we'll see you in May or June. Why? Because these students, they are nervous, and you build a little bit of a relationship. You know, these are like half-hour calls. So what I'm saying as an employer, carve out 60 to 90 minutes between January and June for the student that's going to come and work with you. And what do you talk about in those 30-minute conversations? How you doing? How's school? How are your activities, right? Let me share with you what's going on with our business. Let me share with you some of the projects you may be working on. Let me share with you what you could study or read about before you show up. You start building a relationship. You set them at ease. They're a little more aware of what they're stepping into. And then when day one comes, they hit the ground running.
Well, that's interesting. You use the phrase setting them at ease. Yeah. I mean, I think there can be a lot of anxiety about this, I would say.
Exactly, Alex. And that's why in the book I wrote, How to Intern Successfully, there are useful exercises in the book to help students deal with anxiety, fear of failure, lack of confidence, all of these things. And they're breathing exercises, they're meditative, they encourage self-discovery, they encourage, you know, figuring out what it is you're interested in, figuring out, you know, how you can perform at your best. And I don't think kids today, or young adults, I should say, today, spend enough time being introspective and reflecting on who they are and where they want to go. And I think because they don't spend that kind of time, it can lead to anxiety. Because when you know who you are and what you're doing, your confidence level is naturally higher. So a lot of the book is about finding through exercises finding out who you are, what makes you tick, what you're interested in, so that when you get to the internship, a lot of the things that may be challenging emotionally or mentally, you've already gone through all that. And now you can just be there, present, and get some great work done.
Great. Thank you very much for taking us through that interview process. That was very interesting. Now, as far as once they get that internship, what can a prospective intern do to kind of get the most out of that intern experience?
Well, if the firm doesn't offer it, first off, I recommend asking if you can schedule that brief call every 6 to 8 weeks with your manager, see if you can build that relationship before it starts, learn about the projects you work on. Also, I suggest setting an automated Google search that'll send you an email every day with articles about the kind of work that you're going to be doing or articles about the employer itself. I would also suggest that you write out ideally how the internship is going to go so that you envision success, right? So if you, you know, write it down like, hey, I'm going to get in there. I'm going to be on time. I'm going to listen. I'm going to be coachable, right? I'm going to work as hard as I can. I'm going to make sure my schedule is cleared. I'm going to make sure that, you know, I don't go out and stay out too late or, you know, show up tired. I want to make sure I give it my all. I'm going to tell everyone this is what I'm doing over the summer or over the semester or whatever it is. Clear your schedule, clear your space so that people know, hey, you know, Alex is doing this internship and he's giving it his all. And what we should do is help him do the best he can, like that. Also, very important while you're interning, that you're journaling, you're self-reflecting so you can see the ground you're taking. And you can also keep track of the things you're learning and help write your resume later with new skills you've gained. So there's a lot to it that you can use to leverage the internship while you're in there.
What should life look like following an internship? So in other words, what's the best way to kind of segue into the professional world? And how do you kind of leverage that, if you want to think about it that way, into a career? Potentially.
First thing I would do when the internship ends is go out and get some thank you notes and handwrite thank you notes to your manager, your mentor, HR, anyone who had anything to do with you getting your internship. If you want to go forward, you got to make sure that you have a good base of support. So that'd be the first step that I would do and express gratitude. And no one had to do anything for you. And they did it for a summer or a semester or whatever they did. So that's the first thing you want to do. You want to also update your resume with results produced and skills gained. And let me explain results produced. Try to have some numbers with that. In the working world, to the extent you can do this, if someone shows up and says, hey, I increased revenues by 35% or I cut costs down by $20,000 per year, these are tangible things. You can put some numbers to it, that will help in terms of results produced. And then whatever skills you gained, you might have learned how to code the little Visual Basic. You might have learned PowerPoint. You know, whatever skills you gained, it's a good idea to get that down on your resume. I'd also write out for yourself lessons that you've learned so that you can refer to them and build from there. Okay, so a little note-taking for yourself. You know, here are three things I learned that I'm going to take forward in my career and do that. In terms of the folks you were just working with, and it's interesting because to move forward, you want to look back. You want to like stay in touch periodically with the folks that you were working with. Every quarter at first, maybe then semi-annually, you know, with your manager, your mentor, and they love that. You're not coming because you need a reference letter, you need, you know, whatever. You're coming, hey, I just wanted to give you an update. I'm back on campus. I'm taking these courses. I love my internship. I've talked to other kids that have interned and I learned way more. I you know, thank you. And because of that, I'm taking this class, right? They love that kind of call or communication.
Here are a couple of things that stuck out to me after the second segment of my conversation with Rob. We talked a lot about resumes, which I think are kind of an important first step in securing an internship. And I think basically the theme of what we were saying is that it's important to kind of walk the line between standardization and the impression that you want to give of yourself, which is really you want to stand out from the crowd. And if you think about it, those are sort of contradictory goals. Standardization means being like everyone else, really. So, you know, it can be a bit of an art form, and it's important to get some feedback on what your resume looks like and the impression that it gives. Because that's really what you want at the end of the day, is to create an impression with the person that's reading it or interpreting it. And that can be a bit of an art form. It's not something that students will learn in high school or in college. I mean, if they do, it's in passing. It's not a core skill, but it's key. You really need somebody who's going to help guide you through that resume process if you're going to have any success. We also talked a lot about the preparation for internship application and all of the things that you can do to kind of improve your situation when you're going into that process. I would say maybe the number one thing is to do your homework on the company. If you read just for 5-10 minutes, you know, most really on a company's website, the about us, you know, their mission statement, or even some of their marketing and what they advertise themselves to be, I think that makes you look a lot more professional and put together versus walking in without knowing who you're talking to or what you're going to be talking about. That's difficult. That's difficult when you're 18, 19 years old and your prefrontal cortex hasn't fully developed and, you know, that preparation is not something that's intuitive to you. But that might be the single biggest key to presenting yourself in a professional and positive light to these companies. Can you talk about how the climate has changed because of the pandemic and what are some of the challenges that's created?
First, when the pandemic came, roughly 40% of internships were canceled. So there was an initial shock. When a former intern, I wanted to come back, said, no, I got this other big time internship. Well, the pandemic happened and he came back and said, hey, can I come back and intern with you? So there was a shock there initially. And part of that shock was, hey, why don't we do remote internships? So remote internships became a thing during the pandemic. Though I don't think they were as effective as they could have been, because both the employer and the student weren't adept at doing them remotely. And there are certain things you have to do if you're going to do it remotely that if you don't do, they don't turn out.
Which things are you talking about there specifically?
Well, okay. So first off, when someone interns with me, I spent an entire month creating a 25-page guidance document. Okay. And I outline everything in this document. What our mission is, our vision, our values, you know, how we interact, how we get work done, right? All of these little things that you and I may know, like to proofread something, for example, right? We know all these things to do, but they may not. Or presentation skills, right? Because when you take a math class, the answer is 2, and you just stick 2. It doesn't matter if the 2 is the size of the whole page or if it's in fine print, you got it right because it says 2. But not in business. In business, this is going to a manager or a client or whatever. Presentation skills are really important. So it's not just 2 well, but it's how you got to 2 very clear like that. So this document has everything in it that they need to know. And it's a living document. They can edit it, add to it. And we go through that for an entire day and a half at the beginning to know exactly what we're doing, how we're doing it, and who we're doing it with. So if you don't do that, now the internship turns into a bunch of tasks or, you know, just kind of like how did everything fit in and how do we do it? So you got to start with something like that. Then you have to have like a morning call where you align on the mission and the vision and you get clear again why you're here, what you're doing. So you got to do that in the morning. That's not automatic for them. So that's, you know, good 20, 30 minutes every morning. And then you have to have a check-in in the afternoon. You know, probably around 3 when they have a dip in energy and create, okay, what'd you get done today? And what's your plan for the last hour and a half that you see you'll get done? Okay, great. So you have to have these check-in points, right, inside of the mission and vision and the projects you're doing so that they are energized. They know you're engaged, right? And work is getting done. It can't be like, oh, Alex, okay, you know, it's Tuesday. Here's the project for you. We'll talk on Friday. Well, during those 3 days, an intern gets stuck on something, doesn't know what they do, they drift. No, you can't do that with them. So remote has to be monitored, you know, in small chunks of time, and it has to have a big enough context that everything fits. That's what I mean when I say that they're not adept. They're not effective at it, right? It's back to the prep. You know, you do the prep work before they show up. Then it flows. It's easy. You know what to expect. You know how to do it. But back to your question, which is post-pandemic, everyone wants hybrid or everyone wants remote. Like a student thinks, oh, can I live at home and wherever and just do it remote, right? You know, do I have to really get dressed? So what's happened is for students, in many of their minds, I think incorrectly, it became kind of a right. Well, I could do this remote, couldn't I? And the answer is no, because even with what I said about how to do a remote internship, and I've done both, remote, in person, et cetera, right? It's just not as good remote. I feel like I know what I'm doing with remote, and I can tell you, even knowing what I'm doing with remote, it's just not as good as in person. So that's one of the things I think students, they see that they have this right for remote now, and it's just absolutely not true. They've got to come around to, you know, I'm best off early in my career being in the office as much as possible and picking up on the nuances of decisions, the nuances of interactions.
All right. So if you had one sort of parting piece of advice for these young people that are, you know, beginning to look into internships or entering the professional world, what would that one piece of advice be?
That's a challenging question. May I give you a few pieces of advice?
Sure. Yeah.
First thing I want to say is that look at internships as a bonus. Students are under a lot of pressure and stress about it, whether they get it or not. They see it. Just if you get it, wonderful. But look at it like a bonus. If you don't get it, it doesn't mean you can't be, do, and have whatever you want in life. Okay? That's the main thing. Everything is starting earlier and earlier. Like if you want an investment banking internship, your junior summer, which could lead to a full-time job, you have to get your application in by April of your sophomore year. And not only is it early and earlier, it's also more and more competitive because less than 2% of those intern applicants are going to end up getting those internships. And if we're talking big tech, it's 1 in 100. So, you know, that's one challenge there that you got to like treat it like it's a bonus. You know, it's not going to be like, you know, hey, it's definitely happening because I'm a straight A student. There's plenty of straight A students that are not getting those internships, period. That's one thing. Then when it comes to the internships, I think start by really getting to know yourself, your interests, and your intentions. If you start from there and you start looking for what you want, you will find it. Don't just go for the brand name or the highest paying internship. They may not be what is best for you. So I guess my final parting tip of a piece of advice is to know yourself. If you know yourself, right? Like if you get how to intern successfully and you do the exercises, really get to know yourself, what you're interested in, like, don't like, all of that, then you can find your path far more easily than if you don't know who you are and where you want to go. But it just is like, well, everyone's doing that. So I guess, Alex, know yourself.
Here are my final conclusions after my conversation with Rob. These kids are entering a brand new world. When you're talking about internships, and really you're talking about the first step into the professional world after schooling since age 6. So it's really the only thing that they've known. And school and the professional world are entirely different, completely different realms, different set of expectations, different structure, different schedule. Everything is new. That can create a lot of anxiety. Anxiety really is fostered by the unknown. Right, a fear of the unknown. That's one way of thinking about anxiety. And to me, the best way to cope with anxiety is to anchor. What I would call anchor is something I brought up in the conversation as well. Making it more predictable in this case really helps with that anxiety. How can you do that with internships? Well, if you do your homework and you know about a company, that's one way to do it. If you know where their office is, it could be something silly like that. If you know the person who's running the company, that helps too. any sort of familiarity, if you have been working with that schedule, if you know that industry, if you know some of the other interns that are going to be working there, any way, really, creative or not, any way to create that familiarity, I think is going to do a lot towards easing that anxiety and really upping the sort of overall performance of that student and making that a much more fulfilling experience in the end. Another point that stuck out to me was the importance of personal relationships, which are absolutely vital in business. And it's why there's been such an emphasis on social emotional learning, or emotional intelligence is another way to talk about that, because those are the skills, you know, that you foster in relating to other people, you know, social cues, environments, you know, knowing how to read people's emotions and respond to those appropriately, empathy. Those are all very critical in business, and that might seem counterintuitive for business. From the outside, seems like a very objective and cold and concrete type of world. But really, if you're fostering a good relationship with your boss, supervisor, etc., that's really what's important. But that might not be entirely apparent to a young student going into it. But when they hear the word professionalism, they might say, oh yeah, absolutely, I know what that is. But they might not at all know what that means. Perhaps it's worth sitting down and thinking about that. What is professionalism? Beyond showing up on time. I think it's far more about knowing how to write an email, when to time that, what to say in that email, what to do when sticky situations come up, when you blow it, when you make a mistake, what do you say, what do you do? When do you say that, when do you do that? Those types of strategies to me are far more important than the nuts and bolts of filing or data analysis. I mean, yeah, you gotta know how to do that too, but to me, the personal relationship should come first. Another thing that stuck out to me was using connections, really, to secure these internships. Now, it's one thing, really, to throw your resume into a pile. You know, he mentioned the number 2% of those resumes that are actually ultimately accepted into their internship programs. That's really tough. Those numbers are not working in your favor. It's far more successful strategy to leverage any relationships that you have, however you're getting that relationship, whether it's through a parent, whether it's through a friend, through a university career center, which are highly unappreciated. However you're going to make that personal connection, I think your chances are hundreds of times better if you're going through that type of avenue versus putting your resume on a pile and praying. I mean, especially if your resume is not sterling, because, I mean, if you take the top 2%, you know, a company can afford to be very choosy. So if you've only got an average resume or even above average, you're not going to get an internship that way. It's just not going to happen. So, you know, in my experience, find those relationships, go through those avenues first, you know, before you just throw spaghetti to the wall and see what sticks, because that's not going to work.